Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, 100 years ago today, a woman attempted to assassinate Benito Mussolini. Obviously, she failed and just managed to graze his nose with a bullet. The would-be assassin was named Violet Gibson, who was originally from Dublin. We're joined by Patrick McGarty from the Irish Independent. Afternoon, Patrick.
Good afternoon, Sean, to you and your listeners.
Violet, her family would have been Anglo-Irish. That would be the case, was it?
Yeah, that is the case, yeah. Her father was appointed Lord Chancellor by the British administration in 1885. So, yeah, certainly she'd be described as Anglo-Irish. She was born in Dalkey in 1876.
And when was what age was she when she left Ireland?
Well, she was actually, she spent her childhood in Dublin in Merrion Square. So the family home was on 12 Merrion Square. They lived a life of privilege. Violet was the second youngest of eight children. Her dad was Edward Gibson. His wife was Frances. And they lived, you know, they were homeschooled, reared by a governess. They didn't really move. As a family, they were over and back to London because they of the nature of Edward Gibson's post and that. But certainly they moved quite a bit from between London and Dublin. And they were a high-profile family in Anglo-Irish society. Violet was actually presented as a debutante to the court of Queen Victoria when she was 18. You know, so very high-profile family in the social circles of both London and Dublin.
And because she was born and grew up in those kind of circles, what were the circumstances when that changed for her, that she became a bit more political?
Well, I suppose she never had a job as such because the family were independently wealthy. But unlike the rest of her family, she did become, I suppose she was an advocate for social justice. She was a pacifist. In World War One, she opposed the war. She worked with Sylvia Pankhurst, and the whole pacifist movement at the time. She had moved to Paris. Now, at that stage, she had, you know, gone through a fair bit of trauma in her life. She had lost a brother, a sister-in-law. And in her childhood, she would have what we would call today, you know, she would have suffered from quite a bit of childhood trauma as well. She suffered, I suppose, physical illnesses of pleurisy and scarlet fever, but she also suffered what doctors diagnosed at the time as bouts of hysteria, you know. Mm. So she did struggle with her mental health as well at the time.
Yeah, and on the mental health issue, had she been in and out of hospital on the back of that?
No, not until the early 1920s when she lost her brother, Victor, and her family committed her to psychiatric hospital then, and she was certified as insane. And she spent 2 years from 1922 to 1924 in a psychiatric facility in England.
Okay, that which I imagine was extremely grim. She did convert to Catholicism at some point.
She had converted it to Catholicism as a relatively young woman. She travelled the world quite a bit. She immersed herself in religion. In 1902, she converted to Catholicism, so she was in her late 20s. When she did that, you know. So she was, you know, a unique type of individual in many respects from the point of view of the social circles that she socialized and lived in, you know.
Yeah. So how did she end up in Rome?
Well, after she was released from psychiatric care in 1924, she moved to Rome with a nurse companion, an Irish woman called Mary McGrath. So she moved into a convent. They lived in a convent in Rome. And unfortunately, while there, she attempted suicide. She attempted to shoot herself, but fortunately, the bullet missed her heart. But she refused to go home because she knew she would be, again, sent back you know, into psychiatric care. So she agreed that she would go into a psychiatric clinic, straw convent, in Rome, and that's what she did.
Mm.
So she remained in Rome, lived in Rome, but I suppose Italy at the time, again, a lot of political turmoil, rise of fascism, and as a pacifist, she, you know, was very alarmed by what was happening there. There's no doubt about it. She immersed herself in politics there, especially in the reading side, not in active politics, and also in religion. You know, in February 1926, inexplicably, she dismissed Mary McGrath. And then just that bad time in many ways, because not too long after McGrath left, she learned of the death of her mom back in England, and she never got to see her mom before she died, you know. So she was, by April 1926, she was a very, very distressed woman.
Right. Now, and is it known at that point, was she involved with any groups, any anti-fascist groups, and where did she get the gun from?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. There's a lot of speculation about that to this day. You know, some people would say, yes, certainly, she must have been involved in anti-fascist groups. There's no concrete evidence to say that she was. But certainly, there was suspicions that certainly she got a gun. The attempted assassination on Mussolini was well planned, you know, there's no doubt about that. On that particular day, and actually 100 years ago today, as you say, she carried a rock as well as a pistol in case he was in the car and she needed to actually break a windscreen in the car, which she didn't, because he left a conference that he was speaking at, a conference of surgeons. And he decided, instead of getting into the car, he decided to stroll through the crowd. And when she took her opportunity to shoot at him.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to Progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit Progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
Now, presumably she must have known that he was prone to doing that. I mean, notwithstanding having the rock as well, just in case.
Absolutely. So, again, going back to your earlier question, did she operate alone? That's still a mystery.
Yeah. Now, the first shot she took at, well, it was the only shot she took him as it turned out, just grazed his lung. Was that because she was a poor shot, or was it just bad luck?
Bad luck, Sean, more than the bad, you know. He just turned his head. There was actually student supporters singing songs in honor of him, and he literally just turned around when he heard them singing, and the shot just grazed his nose. She again went to shoot him again, but the gun jammed, like the revolver. It was a Modelo 92 revolver. Again, it was an old revolver. So the gun jammed, and basically Mussolini escaped, essentially.
But she was standing in a crowd full of Mussolini supporters.
Yes, absolutely, and she was immediately attacked by them, but fortunately she was rescued by, there was police around obviously as well, so she was rescued and she was taken into custody. That was it basically.
The reaction of the authorities afterwards is interesting, because one assumes in those days she could have faced the death penalty, or was that the case for this kind of an action?
Oh, absolutely. And in Italy at the time, she certainly would have faced the death penalty, because, but I suppose because of who she was and, again, who her family were, like there was obviously negotiations over and back between the British authorities and the Italian authorities. Now, funny enough, while she was, I suppose, technically, you know, Irish, she was never an Irish citizen. And that's where, you know, she obviously would have had strong unionist views because of her her family background and that as well. So she wasn't an Irish citizen. So it was the British and Italian administrations that were over and back there. But the press portrayed her as, you know, an eccentric religious maniac, you know, a madwoman, essentially. That's what was in the press, you know. But I suppose they failed to realise that, you know, the woman was a committed anti-fascist. She was a pacifist, an advocate for social justice. So that's the side of Violet that has been forgotten about. And it suited everybody, I suppose, the discourse at the time. You know, to portray her in that way, and you know, her family highlighted her struggles with mental health as well. They actually sent a telegram to Mussolini apologising for what happened, and that was it. You know, so at the time, a lot of people don't realise that in the, you know, in the mid 1920s, Mussolini was a very, very popular leader across Europe. You know. Nobody predicted what was going to, you know, come afterwards, obviously, you know.
Yeah. So then after that, was she put on trial or anything of that nature in Italy?
No, she wasn't. She was taken away and she was put into jail initially, and then she went into psychiatric care. And I suppose she transferred over and back between jail and psychiatric care until the following year. When again, you know, British and Italian authorities decided, you know, not to have a public trial, and the decision was to deport her to England. So she was freed, deported into the care of her sister Constance, and taken back to England in 1927.
And from that point, was it shortly after that that again she was put into a psychiatric hospital?
Yeah. Her family committed her to a psychiatric hospital, St Andrews in Northampton, and there she remained for the rest of her life. And unfortunately, when she was there, she actually tried to write to a number of prominent people, including the future Queen Elizabeth, who was then Princess Elizabeth, pleading for her release. She also communicated with Winston Churchill as well. But the hospital authorities never sent her correspondence, you know. That was it. Nor did they. They blocked all correspondence coming from her her friends outside as well, you know. So that was it, unfortunately. So she remained there until 1956 when she died. She died lonely. Her family didn't attend her funeral, no friends or family attended her funeral. She had, you know, left £100 in her will for a headstone and all that, but again, a lot of her wishes were not followed, and she was buried in a simple grave in Northampton, in Kingsthorpe Cemetery in Northampton. And all that's on her grave really is her name, her date of birth, her date of death, and that's it. You know,
so. And the family had effectively disowned her at this point.
Yeah, unfortunately they had. They had, and she was, you know, I suppose she's a woman that's overlooked quite a lot, you know, in history. When we look at it, like, you know, like there was four assassination attempts on Mussolini. And Violet, believe it or not, was, you know, she became closest to success, and that was it. You know, but thankfully she wasn't forgotten about by her native city or her native country, Ireland, because in 2022, Dublin City Council erected a plaque at her family home in Merrion Square. Now, it doesn't describe the incident or anything like that. It just simply, Violet Gibson, 1876 to 1956, lived here, basically, and it describes her as an anti-fascist, which she was. Obviously, she had her struggles with mental health. There's no doubt about that. But the other side of her was she was an advocate for social justice, for peace, and she was obviously a fervent anti-fascist as well.
Patrick, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Patrick McGarty there from the Irish Independent. There is a book, I see Raven Books in BlackRock sent me a, what do you call them on Blue Sky? It's not tweets, but whatever you call them. There's a book called by Frances Stoner Saunders called Woman Who Shot Mussolini. Obviously, Raven Books have copies to sell, and no doubt other bookshops too as well.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.